to Guerrilla Radio, recorded February 18th and 19th, 2023. Well, on February 8th of this year, Dutch police presented new evidence to the District Court of The Hague regarding the July 17th, 2014 downing of Malaysia Airlines flight MH17. Upon entering their evidence, the Dutch government and an Australian investigator on the case admitted to having held American military satellite images from the court, the press, and defense lawyers throughout the two-year trial for the wrongful deaths of the 298 people who perished aboard that ill-fated flight. John Helmer is a journalist and author who spent decades living in and reporting from Russia. The principal behind the web's news site Dances with Bears, Helmer has too been a professor of political science, sociology, and journalism, and has served as advisor to governments at the highest levels. Among his many book titles are Skripal in Prison, The Man Who Knows Too Much About Russia, The Jackal's Wedding, American Power, Arab Revolt, his latest, Australian Fascism, How It Destroyed the Courts, and The Lie That Shot Down MH17. His recent article on the latest from The Hague and the MH17 disaster is U.S. Satellite Photos Revealed at Last. Now they incriminate the Dutch police, prosecutors, and judges in the MH17 show trial. John Helmer in the first half. And BC's Ministry of Environment and Climate Change Strategy has granted permits for the Ministry of Forests to begin a spring spraying campaign across swathes of Vancouver Island. The plan is to use 4A48B, better known as BTK. Dr. Jennifer Tynan is a physician and radiology specialist. Jennifer's also a mum whose child's school is in one of the proposed spray zones, and she serves as spokesperson for Communities United for Clean Air, a grassroots initiative to stop the spray. Jennifer Tynan and fighting to keep Vancouver Island's air clear of BTK in the second half. But first, John Helmer and the JIT's latest shot in the West's war against Russia. Well, welcome back to the program, John.
Thank you for having me, Chris.
Well, you know, it's always my pleasure. Now, John, I got to admit to being a bit confused about The Hague's legal process in the MH17 case. And why is it having briefings yet? I mean, long after its verdict was determined in pointing blame in that case. Now, off air, you were telling me this has more to do with spreading the blame around and applying something they call functional co-perpetration, trying to pin this essentially on the leadership in Russia. But doesn't that take for granted? I mean, isn't this just a disingenuous way of reinforcing what you've described as a kangaroo court there already, reinforcing their predetermined, I would argue, verdict that Russia is guilty for downing MH17 when not everybody agrees with that?
That's a big mouthful to respond to. And you're right, Chris. First of all, this press conference in which the prosecutors, the investigating team that had worked since 2014, controlled by the Ukrainian Secret Service, the SBU, and the Dutch police, it was their so-called wrap-up final press conference. In fact, it's a curtain raiser because the Dutch Prime Minister, Prime Minister Rutte, has introduced back in 2020 a Dutch state case against the Russian state in the European Court of Human Rights. So they want that to continue, and it's been suspended in the European Court of Human Rights. About 9,000 cases relating to the Ukraine and Crimea are still proceeding in that court, but essentially suspended, including about four cases of lawyers representing victims of the Malaysia Airlines MH17 flight that was shot down in July 2014. So it's a curtain raiser, it's not a curtain dropper on that proceeding. But even more egregiously calculated, more propagandistic, is the attempt to continue the case and the vilification of President Putin, which has been announced by the German who runs the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen. And what she's done recently is to have proposed a UN or an European Commission-sponsored international criminal tribunal to prosecute what she calls Russian war crimes in the Ukraine. That tribunal, if it ever gets off the ground, will include the MH17 case, but it will continue and exaggerate and propagandize everything the other side says, starting from the Zelensky regime in Lvov, to attack and vilify and propagandize against Russia forever. And that's an attempt that would duplicate the NATO allies' attempt to put Slobodan Milosevic on trial. And you remember that he died in that captivity before the trial ended for his alleged war crimes in the former Yugoslavia, defending Serbia from a NATO attack.
Yeah, resistance is the highest crime, it seems to me. Well, von der Leyen will get her wish if Kamala Harris has anything to say about it. She was in Munich the last few days at the defense conference, CONFAB, there, and she gave a little stand-up. It was stirring and going on about Russian war crimes and that they will pay. They will pay. And I'm wondering, is this what she's referring to? She says, oh, it's been an established, we have a process establishing Russian war crimes and they will pay, and pointing her finger at President Putin at the same time. Is this, do you know, connected to the von der Leyen's opinion, as you repeated, and the court process in The Hague?
It's very difficult to take seriously Miss Harris's statements. She makes incredibly stupid statements, whether she's on the Korean border, whether she's in Poland, wherever she's standing, there's a disconnect between her brain and reality. But in this case, though,
John, she said that this has been established, and that's what sort of made me prick up my ears. I know what you're saying about she's a bit of a moonbat, but this time she goes, there is a process that we, the government of the United States of America, presumably, have established. So I'm wondering if that's, you know, the underpinnings to if the Hague and von der Leyen are sort of part of the infrastructure of bringing these charges forward.
Yes, it's a cover story. It's repeating the process that was an illegal one at the beginning. As Christopher Black, the distinguished Canadian war crimes tribunal attorney, has pointed out, Harris is unlikely to be the vice president of the United States by the time anything like this gets started. And she's going to follow the other moonbats, as you call them, of ex-prime minister Truss and Annalena Baerbock. Annalena Baerbock was competing with Kamala Harris in moonbattiness at the Munich Security Conference when she was asked what she meant by regime change as an objective of the war against Russia. And she said something to the effect that President Putin, of course she wouldn't use his title and probably didn't call him Mr. I haven't got the transcript right in front of me, but Baerbock, the trampoline champion of Germany, said he would have to change his position 360 degrees before you. And then that caused laughter all over Russia, as everybody noted that Ms. Baerbock, the foreign minister of Germany, doesn't understand basic geometry, and that 360 degree turn was a laughable display of her incompetence.
Well, as a trampoline championship, she must know what a pirouette is, but maybe it was just a lapse. But
she's been falling on her head.
Well, in regards to regime change, though, she just announced, I just saw it today, that I don't know where this even came from, but should the government fall in Germany, that she has put forward that she, and she's currently, that we should say, with the Green Party, and serves as a foreign minister in the coalition government of Olaf Scholz, that she would put herself forward to be chancellor. So she's as
would.
Ambitious as Kamala.
Indeed. She has slightly more electoral prospect than Kamala Harris. And this putting herself forward as chancellor is indeed an indication of the Green Party ambition and what my colleague George Eliasson has been researching as the scheme of the Greens in direct alliance with certain factions in Washington to advance themselves as the most loyal warriors on the US behalf against Russia in Germany. The trouble for people like Baerbock and Habeck, the deputy chancellor, is that kingmakers very rarely get elected as kings. And the result of the Berlin election a few days ago, a rerun of an illegal, court-declared illegal election of 2021, seems to indicate that the Green Party has peaked already in Berlin, which for good reason ought to be one of their best performing constituencies. And they've dropped almost a percentage point in the last election, while the Christian Democratic Union gained 10 percentage points. What the Berlin election shows you is a dynamic in Germany. Well-off children, that's to say people under the age of 20 but capable of voting, well-off children vote Green. Well-off children vote Baerbock as chancellor. But well-off children in Germany constitute the population that are shielded from all of the misfortune of everyone else. Their parents house them. They're not having to pay mortgages. Their parents pay the electricity bill. They're not feeling cold. All they do, these young green voters, these trampoline champions aged 18, what they do is have fun. And they have fallen hook, line, and sinker for the green fabrication. But if the Berlin election extends to the rest of Germany, the Greens are on their way out.
I can't imagine. The Green Party and people here in Canada might not understand that they've been a fervent pro-war party for quite some time now. I'm of an age that I remember when they were against the cruise missiles when they were coming out, and they were big in the anti-nuclear movement way back when. But those are days of the past. As far as George Eliasson goes, yes, that's yours and George's two-hand program, War of the Worlds, at TNT Radio. People can get a link, I suppose, at your site to that. I was listening to it this morning, and he was talking about how that the Green Party also is in favor of a widespread deindustrialization of Germany. If that's the case, I don't think even the teenagers in Berlin are going to be rushing out to cast votes on some sort of pastoral future that the Green Party is envisioning.
No, the short answer is that there are civilized and normal people in Germany, and there are people, let's hope there's a majority of them among German voters, whose heads connect to their pockets and not to their smartphones. And the Green voter has reached the peak of support. The union voters, the SDP voters, the East German voters, the voters of the industrial cities where the major arms producers, ThyssenKrupp, for example, and others, Krauss-Maffei, where they're headquartered, there has been a visible increase in the green vote until now. There isn't the confidence in the financial markets in Germany, Frankfurt, for example, that the arms manufacturers that build the Leopard tank that's being shipped to the Ukraine, or the missiles, or the infantry vehicles and other military equipment the Germans have committed to supplying the war. There isn't the confidence in the cities where the workers build those weapons that the war will go well for their weapons. Their share prices of these companies are going down. And if share price and dividend and profitability go down in Germany, then the union workers, the unionized workers, the union managements and leaderships of these groups will change their votes. And if anything, this bodes well for the Christian Democratic Union, the so-called right, plus the alternative for Germany, the AfD party, which also did slightly better in Berlin. It's doom for the left, however, the so-called left.
Well, let's talk a little bit about German politics in a minute. But before, I don't want to leave Russia just yet and their culpability as seen by The Hague and the United States naturally and everyone else. But there's sort of there's a timeline here of crimes. And I'm wondering if these are being cited by The Hague as well. The Skripal, the so-called Skripal poisoning in Britain, MH17, of course, the Navalny, the dissident in still in jail, I believe, in Russia. And Crimea and everything else, of course. But does the Skripal case, is this cited as well, or is this something that has just disappeared down the memory hole as far as, I mean, this is a constant pattern of shooting accusations at Russia that have been going on for the last 8 or so years. What about the Skripals? Is that figuring
in? Golly, Chris, you're raising all the bad ghosts of Christmas past, aren't you?
Yep, yeah.
And I don't want to disappoint listeners and act like Scrooge here, but you're quite right.
Humbug.
Yes, but yes, you're right. Each one of these operations, the so-called Novichok poisoning of Yulia and Sergei Skripal and the subsequent death of Dawn Sturges, still under investigation. In a couple of weeks' time, the UK inquiry, the so-called public inquiry into the cause of Dawn Sturges' death, will have a new session. Each of these operations continues to be stoked by one or other of the NATO allies as a stick with which to beat Russia as Russia advances across the Ukrainian battlefield and engages directly in war with the British, whose Challenger tanks are on the way to the Ukraine, with the Germans, whose Leopard tanks are on their way to the Ukraine, and so on. The Norwegians, the United States, and so on. Each one of these ghosts is puffed up as part of the general propaganda offensive to demonize the leadership of Russia as if it's only one evil man. This is a nonsense. It's also a falsification of not only the way Russia, the Russian democracy works, but the particular role that the president of Russia plays in running the country. The Skripal affair, the Novichok affair, the Navalny case, and by the way, I should be telling you in advance that listeners should watch for the big scoop that Lucy Commissar of New York will shortly publish exposing the Navalny hoax just before the Oscar ceremonies launch the question or the issue, the famous envelope opening, on whether the documentary film about Navalny, called Navalny, will win the Oscar for not, it's up for best documentary film. Lucy presents a very vivid case of why it should be up for the best special effects, sound mixing, and cartoon animation prizes. The falsification of the Navalny story is being stoked by the U.S. film industry as well. So well, what does all this add up to? It adds up to propagandizing forever until, quotes, Russia's defeated, until, quotes, there's a regime change in the Kremlin, not a 360-degree change, as Ms. Baerbock seems to count.
Well, if the White Helmets can win, then why not? If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with John Helmer. John's a journalist and author. He spent decades living in and reporting from Russia. He's the principal behind the web news site Dances with Bears. He's also been a professor of political science and sociology and journalism, and he served as advisor to governments at the highest levels. Among his many book titles are Skripal in Prison, The Man Who Knows Too Much About Russia, The Jackal's Wedding, American Power, Arab Revolt, and his latest, Australian Fascism, How It Destroyed the Courts, and The Lie That Shot Down MH17. Before we leave, I know I promised we'd leave it, but let's not leave it just yet. MH17, you've written an article about what's going on in The Hague. U.S. satellite photos revealed at last Now they incriminate the Dutch police, prosecutors, and judges in the MH17 show trial. John, I mean, briefly, the satellite, the famous satellite pictures that were promised by John Kerry when he was still in government, were going to prove that Russia was responsible for shooting down MH17, a fact, in scare quotes, that the Hague has proven to its own satisfaction, if not the rest of the world. But those satellite photos never showed up. Now, lo and behold, these years later, some not those satellite photos of Russian weapons shooting down the airplane have appeared, but other ones. Do you want to explain what satellite photos have been finally revealed and what they reveal?
Please to Chris, and I hope it doesn't try listeners' patience, since ears don't see, but let me try to explain. The press conference held by the investigators published two satellite pictures, one of truck transporters covered with tarpaulins from Kursk, a military base on the Russian side of the border. Ms. Truss, the ex-prime minister of the UK, never understood where the border was. Published on the 18th of July, and another picture at Milarovo, published on the 20th of July. So within hours at Kursk and within days at Milarovo, the US satellite capabilities been demonstrated to show alleged Buk missile transporters similar to those alleged by photographs published by the Ukrainian secret services, evidence that the Russians brought in on a truck transporter the missile, fired it at MH17 on the 17th of July, and then raced it back across the border into Russia, proving, they say, not only that the Russians brought the missile in, the Russians ordered it fired, and so forth and so on. That's the core of the evidence in the Dutch prosecution. However, as you rightly said, Chris, as you rightly remembered, as we need to remember, everybody listening, that John Kerry lied his head off when he said immediately after the shootdown, we have the images. We have the images showing the trajectory, the hit, and so on. He even said on NBC television, I've been a prosecutor. I know how to prosecute on such circumstantial evidence of murder, of calculated Russian murder. That was the case. The Dutch prosecutors and the Ukrainian Secret Service tried to indict and then succeeded in achieving 3 out of 4 convictions, except that even Kerry, as a liar, a U.S. Senate and presidential appointee liar, couldn't have put through a civilized court of law in the United States. Why? Because the circumstantial evidence he referred to didn't exist. And if you had to bring it into court, it had to meet a standard of admissibility, meaning it would have to survive a test of forgery. And second, it would have to substantiate the proof beyond reasonable doubt. That's the civilized legal standard for proving a case of a crime as grievous as murder. There's no doubt that the passengers, the 298 people killed, very sadly, out of the air that day, were killed. There's no doubt they were the subject of a hostile fire. Who fired, what was fired, and who's culpable, those issues were never settled in the Dutch court. That court was a show trial, and the satellite evidence was the first independent visual proof offered. Only the Dutch have left both a confidential and an open record that when asked to provide the satellite pictures, the United States refused. Instead, what they did, and this is all documented in the book, what they did was send a memorandum dated in August 2016 to the Dutch signed by a colonel of the U.S. Army called Stolworthy. And Stolworthy summarized what the evidence from the satellite imagery suggested. It's inadmissible. It's trash. You wouldn't take it near a court if you were a genuine prosecutor from the state of Massachusetts, like John Kerry once was. Why? Because the court would laugh you out. And the defense attorney would tell you to get out of court and go back to law school. The Stolworthy paper not only wouldn't survive a civilized court in the United States, it didn't survive the Dutch military intelligence chief at the time, who reported to the JIT, the investigative team, that Dutch military intelligence and their partners, Dutch partner, the United States, Dutch partner, NATO, the Dutch military intelligence chief reported that the Dutch intelligence and the partner intelligence did not substantiate the firing of a Russian missile at that aircraft. Now, that occurred, that report spilled out, was leaked, is reported in the book, 4 weeks after Stolworthy's memorandum. Stolworthy's memorandum was introduced during the court proceeding, but not the Dutch memorandum. In other words, the court proceeding itself manipulated the evidence, and finally out comes a satellite production from the United States in the final so-called press conference of the investigative team. That proves the U.S. had satellites with that level of resolution above the murder scene on the 18th.
But the fact that they didn't release any photos of it says they either didn't have photos, or they did have photos, but the photos didn't show the things that they wanted them to show. And so it still, again, that puts the onus of who fired this deadly rocket in question. Again, John, we're fast out of time. Now, you can go to John's website, johnhelmer.net, and order his book, The Lie That Shot Down MH17, and his other books as well. John, we'll go to an extended version of this, but for this edition, we're going to break off, and Jennifer Tynan's going to come on and talk about the gypsy moth, or now called, politically correct, retitled spongy moth eradication campaigns, aerial spraying campaign of a bacillus over my hometown and across the island of Vancouver Island. But For now, John, thanks a lot for coming on.
Thanks for having me. I'll look forward to the spongy moth next.
Their message always to everybody through all their advertising, all their PR, everything is, we are your friends. And it's like, no, you are not our friends. Friends are not people. Whose bottom line is how much profit they can make out of you. It is completely different.
Guerrilla Radio, knowing who our real friends are since 1999.
We're running out of time to put out a fire.
And welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Again, I'm speaking with John Helmer. John is a journalist and author. He spent decades living in and reporting from Russia. He's the principal behind the web news site Dances with Bears. He's been a professor of political science, sociology, and journalism. His book titles include Skripal in Prison, The Man Who Knows Too Much About Russia, The Jackal's Wedding, American Power, Arab Revolt, and his latest, Australian Fascism, How It Destroyed the Courts. Now, John, we've been talking about the MH17 case. There's another big case going on, and we were talking earlier, too, about the German economy and what's going on in Germany. Well, nothing bigger, I think, has happened economically to Germany in recent times than the destruction of the gas pipelines from Russia supplying them, not just the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, which was yet to open, but the Nord Stream 1 pipeline that's been in operation for many years and has bolstered the German economy for a long time. Seymour Hersh, on the 8th of February, released a ground-shaking report. At least it's gotten a lot of publicity, pointing the finger directly at the United States for this destruction. The article is How America Took Out the Nord Stream Pipeline. You've been a sole voice taking issue with Hersh's, not only his method, but his findings. What's your problem with Seymour Hersh's report?